What makes your heart come alive now? A sunset? The waves crashing on the shore? A soundtrack of your favorite movie? The words of a song? A thunderstorm? The laughter of your children? Back a ways, I was riding in the car, and the Lord said to me, "What are all the abandoned sentences in the Bible? Tell them to me." And I thought, well, I know this one. You know, Job, who said, "If you slay me, I'll trust you." And Mary, who said, "Be it done to me according to your word." And Esther, who said, "If I perish, I perish." And Jesus, who said, "Not my will, but yours be done." Or, "One thing I desire, and that will I seek." Or, "You meant it for evil, God meant it for good. I'm in the place of saving all these lives." And then he said to me, "What do you say?" And I said, "I want to spend it all and die in your arms." And he said, "Well, put that in there." He said, "Because it's all the same. It's all the same. The ground is level at the cross." So my abandoned statement means as much to his heart as somebody right out of the Bible. And so does yours. That summer, he was romancing me with a song called "Making Memories of Us." I don't know if any of you know that song by Keith Urban. But one of the sentences is, "I want to sleep with you forever." So I felt like he was answering back what I said to him. "I want to sleep with you forever. I want to die in your arms in a cabin by a meadow where the wild bees swarm." And right after that, I'd been kind of just living in a song for a couple of weeks, because it says, "I'm going to love you like you've never been loved before." And I was very sick, so it was just really carrying me through these weeks. And then someone gave us a gift to go to a dude ranch for a week. And that's where you ride horses and everything out in the, you know, in the mountains in Colorado. And so as we were walking up to our cabin, the Lord said to me, "How do you like your cabin by a meadow where the wild bees swarm?" Sure enough, there was our cabin, there was a meadow, and there is where they kept all the horses, which were wild, by the way. I mean, we rode them, we had to run, and when they opened the gate to let them out into the pasture for a little break after the week, they found a hole in the fence and they disappeared. They were wild. And we also saw bear and elk and all kinds of things. And that's right out of the song. "In a cabin by a meadow where the wild bees swarm." And then at the end it says, "I'm going to make you a promise. If there's life after this, I'll be there to meet you with a warm, wet kiss." You know, the romance starts with a kiss. That's in the Song of Songs. "Kiss me with the kisses of your mouth." It means kiss me with the kisses of your word. It's a cry for intimacy. Through the romance, God is saying, "Dance with me, Lena. Dance with me, Debbie. Dance with me, but I don't know how." "Yes, you do. You've been dancing with me for 19 years, but I don't know the steps. I'll teach you. Here at Somerset, right now." Where will the music come from to dance? It comes from the book of love. Remember the words, the book of love has music in it. In fact, that's where music comes from. Some of it's transcendent, some of it's really dumb. You know the book. The stories are mixed together. A transcendent king and people doing really dumb things. Like David, who had all these wives available to him, took one poor man's wife, got her pregnant, and then sent him to the front lines to be sure that he was, and made sure that he was killed, and then tried to cover it up. Or Samson, who kept telling Delilah, who kept asking him, "Where's your strength come from?" And he kept telling her a lie, but she always had the Philistines ready to pounce on him. And then he does tell her the answer, and the Philistines do pounce on him. Stupid, dumb things. How about Pharisees? My gosh, it doesn't get any dumber. You know, they're tithing little herbs, and they murder the Son of God. They miss the whole thing. Unable to hear the music of the gospel. If we can't hear the music, how will we dance? Did you hear his invitation out of the sterile, lifeless place, void of passion? This is a woman whose entire dream is to become a world-class dancer, not realizing that if she reaches that goal, it will not be enough for her heart. Now her dance reflects her life. No music, no heart, no love. She dances without music, she dances without her heart, and she dances alone. What brought her to this place? What was exposed in her heart in those moments that brought such a bitter response? Here he was, the epitome of Latin dance, inviting her to hear the music, to move, and to be moved. And her response was, "Who do you think you are? Don't you know you're talking to a professional international Latin ballroom dancer?" Okay, she's a professional Latin dancer. He's a professional Latin. She was so offended, so proud of her perfectly choreographed steps. Her pride, not his words, elicited this revealing response from her heart. Was he carelessly insulting her? Or was he seeing something in her that showed him that her heart had moved so far away from her first love of dance? Exposed in that moment was her loss, the loss of her first love. We lose our first love, don't we? Somewhere down the road, we're willing to replace the romance, this intimate love affair with God who woos us with stars, for something far more tame and far more easily mastered. Remember, we said it's a love affair set in the midst of a life and death battle, and that the future of the kingdom rests on our courage. What is Jesus seeing that tells him that other things have become more important to us? That we're giving ourselves to things that perish. The Bible says the cares of this life, the deceitfulness of riches, and the desire for other things choke the book of love, and it becomes unfruitful. He said to the church of Ephesus, "I know your deeds, your hard work, your perseverance, but I have this against you. You've forsaken your first love. You've lost the romance." So I can be working really hard, doing good deeds without my heart. Yeah, duty and obligation. That's sometimes where some of the things that we do for God come from. He's going to come and knock on the door of our hearts. And it may come as a difficult moment at first, but we need to see it as an invitation from a God who loves us in pursuit of our heart. Your response will reveal your heart. Ruby could not hide what was going on in her heart. But let me tell you a little bit more about Ruby's story. Ruby has been devilishly hard to romance up till now. She starts to recognize, though, that Raphael is offering her what she thought she could never have, to be captivating to one that she carried in her heart even though she never met him. She's beginning to thaw. She's beginning to let the romance in, but he's not yet won her heart. So Ruby returns to her old dance partner and her dream of being a world-class dancer with her eye on the championship trophy. So let's watch the final dance in the competition, the rumba. I want you to look for Jesus as he tries to woo and win her back. And I just want you to remember that this is a metaphor. So, and also remember, if any time during this retreat I offend you, I just want you to remember one thing. I planned it. There's more than one competition going on here. There's one for a trophy and one for her heart. One will be tarnished, the other will remain. One will be forgotten, meaning nothing. She does go on to win the championship trophy. It's a hollow victory, one she could care less about sharing with the man that she danced with. Do you see how he degraded her? How he tried to destroy her dignity in that moment? If you want to see a picture of the religious spirit, that's what he looks like. Keep that picture in your head. He hates your freedom. He hates your beauty. He hates who you are. He hates that you could enjoy being loved by God and loving God. He cuts in on your dancing, and he shuts your heart down. There was a time, one time I was, we were on our way to do it. We were going to do a captivating retreat, and we normally went up on Thursday morning, and so the other speaker said to me, we decided that we were probably going to go up Wednesday night, and did I want to go up Wednesday night? And so I thought about it, and they said, you know, then we have the place to ourselves that evening, and then we wake up and we're already there. And I thought, oh my gosh, that sounds great. And so they said, pray about it. And I was just, oh yeah, I want to go. And then they came back and they said, we're not going. So you decide what you want to do. And I thought, you know, you can do what you want. And I thought, yeah, I can do what I want as long as I do the right thing. That's how I was hearing it, you know. I'm not sure if that's what it was being communicated, but how I was hearing was, I've got to do the right thing here. What if I don't go up with them and I look like I'm not part of the team now? And so rather than having this beautiful choice to have this time with the Lord before a retreat, to just sit and kind of be in his presence, now I having to figure out who I'm supposed to please here. And so I'm doing all my people-pleasing, you know, panicking feeling, and I'm trying to hear God. God, you want me to go? And I'm trying to hear in my head and just all this stuff. And then I finally was so exhausted in my heart from trying so hard to hear what to do. You know, tell me what to do, and I'll do it. And I collapsed, really, in my heart, and I just said, a line right out of the Mask of Zorro just came out of my heart, and I said, when I sleep, I will dream of this dashing rogue. Can you tell me where I might find such a man? And it was as if the Father leaned forward and he just said, you know Zorro, he could be anywhere. And that alone just broke open my heart. And I knew he was inviting me. He was, because I got to the quiet place in my heart of, what do I want? I want to find this dashing rogue. I'm looking for this man. And so I went up there. I had my answer, and when I had my answer, I didn't care what they thought. You know, so I went up that night, and I had my windows were open. It was a beautiful, warm summer evening. Everybody thinks Colorado is really cold all the time. We have incredible weather, beautiful summers. We leave our doors open all night in our windows in the summer, and we don't have bugs, and it's awesome. You can all come. And so I was driving up to the retreat center in the mountains by myself. The windows were down, had the sunroof open, kind of driving fast. And I had a worship song on. And I was beside myself. I was having the best time. I was worshiping to Elvis Presley singing, I'm a hunk of burning love. And it was so fun. And then he was singing back to me, you light my morning sky with your burning love. And I thought, that's my new job description. I just want to light his morning sky with my burning love. And so then I'm driving and I'm thinking, I wonder if anyone else has ever worshipped to Elvis Presley singing a hunk of burning love. And then I thought, oh, maybe because you're not supposed to. And so, and then everything just shut down. Just that whole, yeah, you're not supposed to be doing this. And my whole heart shut down. It was kind of like, you guys probably don't have the commercial because it's for cars in America, but this guy's driving along and he's singing and he's got his sunroof open, and all of a sudden little animals pop into the car and they are singing a song with him. And it's just so fun because he's singing, they're singing. All of a sudden a wolf pops in the car and then he eats the bird. And then they all stop and go, hey! And then he spits the bird out and they all start singing again. And it was kind of just like that. It was like this wolf all of a sudden just like, you can't do that. From your heart, enjoy God and kind of just do something different than maybe somebody else would say was okay to do. And I stopped. And then right when I was thinking about this, right back at me, he said, you light my morning sky with your burning love. And I just flew under this sign of a street name, and it said Morning Sun. And so I just thought, that's it. You know, I'm back and just free to worship. But the religious spirit, oh, degrading. You belong down here. You belong wishing that I just don't, you know, hoping I don't step on you on my way by. But he masquerades as the Lord's voice. You think that's his voice. You know, you think that he's somehow like treating you like that. I do, we do. Whenever you're feeling pressure to perform, and I go here a lot, you're starting to hear, you're doing it wrong, you're going to have to try harder than this. You're going to have to work a lot harder to be loved. You come face to face with the enemy who is working powerfully, and he'll make you feel like walking with God is just a chore to be endured. You'll feel like you're too much and not enough all at the same time. He's trying to get you to hate yourself so that you can't offer beauty or be pierced in your own heart by it or receive it from others. He pushed her to the ground with a feeling of, yeah, you're Cinderella, all right, the cellar maid. Not the princess at the ball, the cellar maid. There's no ball, there's no dress, there's no deep magic, there's no Prince Charming. This is all there is. When you're there and you feel like you're not enough and you feel like you need to try harder, when it feels like someone turned the music off of your life and you're fighting the temptation to let the religious spirit shut your heart down and just grab you and drag you off into an abiding place of just hopelessness and despair. It's here where Jesus invites you to faint into his arms and be held by him. You're held, he smiles, and his gaze is on you. Did you know that you have a secret admirer? Could you fall in love with this man? I was at another conference one time in Kansas City at this, the International House of Prayer, and I had been kind of, I had written this, so I was kind of thinking about this picture a lot and kind of just kind of living in it, sort of. And I was at Kansas City, and they had a worship time, and so I was standing up in front, and minding my own, but just worshiping, eyes closed, had been closed for some time, and then someone came up to me. And I was just kind of rocking back and forth. Next thing I know, someone comes up to me, puts her hand right here. I mean, I can't breathe now. And I peek out of one eye, and I just want to tell you, it's a darn good thing it was a woman. It was God coming in this moment. It was God. God coming in this moment, just a tender moment to say, I'm here with you. How do you capture the gaze of one who is so beautiful? I think we hold the Lord's gaze with our heart's desire for him. Just desire alone holds the Lord's gaze. Again, the world is full of people. Most of them don't want anything to do with God. But you've said yes. And you hold his gaze with your desire to be his. God deeply desires to hold the affections of our heart. And he can gaze at us in a way that will literally draw us out of the enemy's grip. Should he drag me away or I go willingly, he is always waiting for me. This clip was a perfect picture of dancing with the enemy. Cutting in, dragging you away, holding you captive to fear and to just despair and just a feeling of worthlessness. It was one time in November, just a few years back, that I was sitting in my car and I was going to go into the anything but Transcendent grocery store again. And I didn't know if I could get myself in there because I was in so much pain. I said, I don't know, God, if I can survive this romance. I had been living with so much pain for so long, it felt like living with a warfare, enough warfare for six people for a long time. I was in excruciating pain for a long time. And I just wasn't sure I could drag myself in there. And I said to God, I said, please, let something from heaven touch me. And I walked into the store, and I turned this way to get a cart, and behind me, I heard someone singing. Because he lives, I can face tomorrow. Because he lives, all fear is gone. Because I know who holds the future. My life is worth the living just because he lives. And I got my cart, and it was the most beautiful voice. And I walked over to where I heard the voice, and it was a Salvation Army bell ringer. And I couldn't breathe. I was trying to get money out of my wallet. It was so beautiful. It's actually hard to walk over to where he was. It was so beautiful. And I see this man, this young, overweight, very unattractive man, completely blind. All he could see was white. And I took my hand and I went to put the money in, and I said, absolutely beautiful. And he just reached down and touched my hand and wouldn't let go. I never felt anything so soft in my whole life. He just held my hand there before I could move it. On that day, I was the poor, blind beggar, because I had nothing to give and I could not see. In fact, I was going to ask him, are you an angel? Because if and you're an angel, I'm going to tie myself to your leg and say, take me to your leader. God romanced me right there in the entrance to the grocery store. He thanked me with words for the moment that spoke of eternity. And then he sang this stanza. One day I'll cross the river and fight life's final war with pain. And then as death gives way to victory, I'll see the lights of glory and I'll know he lives. Life gives way to death and death gets the victory. Then death gives way to life and life gets the victory. And not just physically, not just when we die. If you have lived in a place of life and death has come and taken that life, life will come back and swallow that death. Another time I walked into an anything but transcendent grocery store, and it was right around about the same time, and I could hardly hold my head up. I could hardly even really walk in there, and I was in a hell of a lot of pain. And I don't mean that as a little phrase. I mean I was in hell. I made my bed in Sheol. I was in hell. And I walked in there, and somewhat just kind of feeling like, God, where are you? And I stood there, and I was down an aisle, and I looked up, and I saw, my eye caught one of those silver kind of speakers. And just as I looked up, and I said out loud, nobody was around me, but I said out loud, you know, you could say something. Now, he literally, that's what came out of the speaker when I said, you know, you could say something. There's something that I want to say. But words sometimes get in the way. I just want to show my feelings for you. That's what the Lord's doing with you. I walked out of that store, had my head up, kind of a bounce in my step, in a hell of a lot of pain. I'm going to have Misty share about a way that God has recently romanced her heart.
The romance really comes in so many different ways. And for me, I had this moment recently where God just came for me and he rescued me. And that's the way that he romanced me. In September, is that right? In August, I went to Kansas City with my fiance because all of my friends in Kansas City said to me, if you don't bring this man to us so that we can meet him before you get married, there's going to be trouble. And so I planned a trip, and my fiance and I went to Kansas City. Lee came along too because she was going to the House of Prayer just to spend some time worshiping and getting filled up before this retreat. And that kind of happened at the last minute, which she thinks she was coming for that, but there was a rescue planned. And so during, you know, I told you earlier that first clip, the proposal that happened the first night, that was my story. But during this last retreat, as I was watching that second clip from Pride and Prejudice, thank you. As I was watching the second clip, I was watching Darcy come up over the hill for Elizabeth. And all of a sudden, I realized that that is what God did for me on my trip to Kansas City. Because what happened was, I have a lifetime of friendship and people who've witnessed my life and who have loved me so well. And when I went to Kansas City, what I was doing is I was going home. And so I went home with my fiance. And as I was there, we had all these meetings set up, all this time set up. And it was set up with different friends, with my pastor's wife and with just different friends who God has put in my life. And by the first day, I went to lunch with him, and it didn't go so well. And by that evening, I went to the house of prayer. They were having awakening services. And so we went that night to the service, and immediately, pretty much, went up front just because my heart was parched. I had lost so much intimacy with God through this relationship, and just from being busy and trying to get ready for a wedding and doing all of these things, and I had really lost my heart. And so we went to this meeting the first night, and I went up and just, you know, to worship, and I had two women and two men who came and who just surrounded me and laid hands on me, and they were friends of mine. They were people that I've walked with for years. And my fiance was somewhere in the back, kind of overwhelmed by the whole thing, did not want to be there. He was not really happy with the situation. And I'm standing up there, and I have these mamas and papas who are praying over me, and just and they surrounded Lee too, and it was just like this cocoon around us of prayer. And for 45 minutes, they prayed for me. And as they were praying, it was just like all the cloud of just confusion. And I was caught in the enemy's grip, like you saw in that show, in that dance with me scene. This man had kind of just subtly manipulated me into something that my heart was not in. And he kind of dragged me off. But in those moments when they were just soaking me in prayer, the Lord came so hard for me. And by the time that the prayer was over, at the end of that 45 minutes, I felt like, oh, here I am. Where did I go? You know? And it was really overwhelming to feel God come that hard and to just feel him bathing me and covering me with prayer and with people's love for me and fighting for me. And so as the weekend went on, at the end of that night, at the end of that prayer time, I turned around and I looked at this man, and I was just like, who is this man? I don't even know him. And it was really shocking. And through the rest of the weekend, there were just rescue after rescue after rescue of people being set in the right place at the right time. Lee has walked with me all through this relationship, and she saw way back at the proposal, the first proposal, and then these other friends that just in the right moment, just as God was uncovering all this other stuff, they were there, and they were there to see, and they were there to offer their wisdom and their understanding, and just to walk with me in it, because God was revealing it to my own heart. They weren't telling me anything until God revealed it to my own heart. And then once I woke up and realized what was going on, and that I was not in love with this man, and that I was, you know, serving something, his dream, not mine, they just... They were right there to be with me and to help kind of carry me out of the situation. And so, like Darcy, the Lord just came so hard all weekend long and rescued me. And it ended up with me breaking the proposal. But I felt so, I didn't feel sad. I felt so rescued by God.
So just keep writing until the music stops. I know you need more time, which is awesome. But could we have a few people share? We've got these mics here again still. Anybody?
God woos me with the mountains. The mountains come alive for me. I've been surrounded by them in my hometown all my life. But since I've given my hand to Jesus, he woos me with the beauty and the majesty of the mountains about. My heart soars. It's like a veil has been lifted from my eyes. And now I see the awesome beauty and majesty and splendor of his creation. When I'm listening to music as I close my eyes, he dances with me. He chooses me to dance with out of all the crowd.
I love that.
God loves to romance me with small and delicate things. He'll send me the smallest of flowers, just a light little breeze on my face. There was this one time this year we went camping up in the mountains with some friends, and there was this forest that had been cleared away, and in its place were just these butterflies. And everywhere I went, there was all these butterflies, and I just knew he was sending them specifically for me. All these glorious types. There was orange ones, there was blue ones, they were just everywhere. And I was walking down the path by myself, just thinking about a few things. My heart was a bit heavy, and I know it had only been a few hours that he'd sent me some butterflies, and I was like, oh, God, where are you? And which is really funny because he's just been covering me with these butterflies. And I turn around the corner and there's this bush, just hundreds and hundreds of these butterflies all hanging off these flowers. And I walk past, I brush my hand, and they come up in this beautiful cloud around me. And I know my God is an extravagant God, and he just loves me extravagantly, because even though I'm going, God, where are you? You haven't been here for half an hour. He just rushes towards me with all these beautiful butterflies.
God romanced me last weekend, but it's today that I realised it was God romancing me. We'd been going through just, you know, life. We'd been sick. All the kids had been sick. Sharon's family had been sick, Sam's family had been sick, and it was just like, I'm sick of being sick, I'm sick and tired of being sick and tired. And I even said to my husband, you know, I'm tired, I'm checking out for a while, I'm sick of this, I'm sick of God, sick of, you know, if this is being a Christian, I'm out for a while. And then as soon as you say that, you go, idiot. But I went grocery shopping with my daughter, God speaking in the shops, and Saturday Night Live was on, and I'm just getting the bread, sick as a dog, but going, Saturday Night Fever, Night Fever. And she looks at me and she says, do you know this song, Mummy? And I said, oh yeah, I know this song. And she says, like, you know this song? I said, oh yeah, Saturday Night Fever. And I'm doing all the moves in the shop, and I go around to another section, another song comes on, I'm singing to that. She says, you know this song too? I go, yeah. And I bop a bit more, and we just had this fun time at the shops. And I got to the checkout, and it was like 5 o'clock on the Saturday. We don't have Sunday trading, Warwick, so you get all the good specials late Saturday. And the lady from the service desk was walking down the checkouts, and she had all these bunches of flowers in her arms. And she steps into my checkout where I'm putting the groceries on the conveyor belt. And she said, I saw you dancing for your daughter. These are for you. Thank you. And that's my love language, because I always used to say to my husband when we were first together, oh, you know, flowers, I love flowers. He goes, what's the point of buying flowers? They just die. And he didn't get that. He didn't get that just a bunch of flowers is just like your tops. And it's just like, thank you, God, in the midst of just feeling yuck for a while, you gave me flowers. Mm. And that was just, yeah.
That's beautiful. Oh, my goodness. Anybody else?
I wanted to share this because of what I shared this morning.
Yeah.
It's like the flip side. I've always felt God romancing me since I was little. And when I turn away from it and when I come back, I've always felt him having hold of me, even if it's just by a tiny pinky or something. So I've always known he's there for me. And he talks to me. The last couple of years, we've fallen into this just talking each day as if he's right there. I've tried to imagine he is right here, like anybody else is. And at night I can close my eyes and we're floating in space talking, and I can visualise what my image of him is and to make it more of a reality for me. And when I sing, I can feel him in my heart. But I think the biggest thing he sent me was my husband, who originally I thought I only married because he accepted me for who I was at the time. And then I went through years of thinking, oh, I've married the wrong person. But my husband is so perceptive with women, how they think. He can see through me. He can see through when I've tried to manipulate or play games or whatever. He still accepts me the way I am. He's not very nice when we're under attack. He's horrible then, but so am I. But we realise why. But yeah, that's the biggest romance I think God's given me is my husband, who just treats me the way he treats me. And I've seen the way he speaks into the lives of some of the women around me as well. And he's able to look into their lives and their hearts and see what's lacking. And that's from doing the Wild at Heart stuff and all that sort of thing. God's been working through him. So, yeah.
That's awesome. When he pursues you, it's a vulnerable place for him. He's waiting for you to choose him. When we do choose him, it's a deeper romance. He calls us into a more fiery, passionate, heart-to-heart, step-for-step romance. So I want you to watch another metaphor of the dance with me. You're thinking, what is she going to do with that clip? I just wanted to show it. Really, don't say anything. Don't think. Don't move. What do you feel? I'm kind of, I just really have you on the edge right now, right? You know, it's a metaphor. It's a metaphor for intimacy. What do you want? Do you want this? It's for every woman, but it will cost you. He's worth it. Does the Lord want this? What kind of relationship does the Lord want? Who is the one who holds his eye? The Bible says his eyes flash back and forth across the earth. He says, this is the one to whom I will look, the one who is humble, contrite in spirit, and trembles at my word. When he finds the one whose heart is fully his, this is the one who holds his gaze. And this is the one, the scripture says, he shows himself strong on behalf of. This is an actual picture of from the Hubble telescope they call the Eye of God. What does the Lord want? Jesus said, I'd rather you be hot or cold, but since you're lukewarm, I'll spit you out of my mouth. The dance pictures honest yet fierce devotion. There's something more going on here. In moments they were in conflict, they're locked in embrace anyway. If you would seek to understand me, Jesus says, if you would hold your heart next to mine, you would know there is something deeper I long for from your heart. To understand my heart is to know I ache for more. I understand your disappointment, your passion, even your anger. I want your intense desire and your intimate gaze. I want all of you. I want to be loved by you from your whole heart, soul, mind, and strength. Don't see me as passionless, unfeeling, and unable to handle you. I'm not like any man you have ever met. Will you risk offering me your whole heart? One time I was listening to a teacher that just kind of, she kind of leaned on the podium and she just said, "You gotta communicate with God." And I thought, oh, geez, it doesn't call to me. You know, it just doesn't move me. What if he said this? "I always want you near me. I've waited for you for so long. Forever, let me wait to see you each and every morning. Let me hear you whisper softly, 'I am yours. In my eyes, I see no one but you. There is no other love like ours.'" This picture reminds me of the verse, "I count it all loss in view of the surpassing greatness of knowing you as Lord, for whom I have suffered the loss of all things and count it but rubbish, in order that I may gain Christ." She could not be more vulnerable. Her neck is completely open. She's on the very tips of her toes. There's only one way she could get up. Did you see how fast she fell? If he doesn't catch her, she's going to fall on that ghetto booty for which she is so famous. Everything is open and laid bare before the one with whom we have to do everything. Everything is open, just like that. It's open and laid bare. Very vulnerable. That's what surrender looks like. Just want to show you a picture of surrender. That's what he wants from us. Everything. Everything open, laid bare before the one. Who is the one? Remember the words we sang at the we listened to at the beginning, that song. "I'm not above the sorrow, heavy-hearted, till you called my name." And it sounds like church bells or the whistle of a train on a summer evening. "I want to meet you barefoot, barely breathing." Moses met him barefoot, and so did Joshua. And Daniel met him barely breathing. He said his body was like chrysolite, his face like lightning, his eyes like flaming torches, his legs bronze. John said his eyes were like blazing fire, his feet were like burnished bronze, his hair was white like white wool, like snow. His voice was like the sound of many waters, his face like the sun shining in its brilliance. They were undone. He had the same effect on the disciples. They saw him feed 5,000 people. Then he walked on the water. When he got to the other side, the crowds gathered, and he saw them expose the very motives of their heart. They said, "You're not coming because you saw a miracle. You're coming because you want something to eat. You're working for food that perishes." And then he told the crowd that he was the bread of life, the bread from heaven. And he said, "Drink my blood and eat my flesh." And in the present day vernacular of friends, they said, "Ew. Ew." The Bible said at that point, many of the disciples turned away from him. He turned to the disciples and he said, "Are you going to leave too?" And they said, "Where are we going to go? You have the words of life. Where else can she go? She's glimpsed his staggering beauty. She falls into his arms. Is she surrendered? No, it's more. Is she abandoned? More. She's ruined. He has pierced her heart with his beauty. Just give me some feedback just real quick. We're very close to being done. Are you guys okay for another just a couple minutes? Okay. How would you like to be loved as a woman? Fully. Fully. Tenderly. Passionately. Extravagantly. Pursued, patiently, honestly. These are good. Wildly? Yeah. Exclusively. Wow. Exceedingly. Wow. A lot of depth of feeling in you guys. You know, I imagine like God's kind of sitting there and he's going, let's see, wildly, passionately, exclusively. Wait a minute. I can love you like that. Pick me. Pick me. I can love you like that. I can love you if you let me love you. Let me love you. That's just one of the songs in a moment that God gave to me. He says, I dare you to surrender everything to me. Everything. Will you fall as she fell? There will not be a net to catch you. You just have to believe. He'll catch you. You won't see it. He'll catch you. I mean, you won't see the net before you fall. And believe like a little child, like we sang this morning, like a little child. You can't get there without falling and expecting to be caught. If I fall, Jesus, what then? If you fall, you get all of me. There's no holding back. He will lift you up and hold you in such a way that you will know that you are safe and cherished, and it will feel like this. Now you're here, and it's everything you ever longed for, and you won't be able to breathe. And he says, keep your heart here with mine. This is just a picture for you of abiding. He says, abide in me and I in you, for apart from me you can do nothing. But that's what it's right here. There's just an intimacy. Keep your heart here with mine. Just press it right up against my heart. And just hold it there, no matter what occurs. Just hold your heart here with mine. In me you live and move and have your being. You're my beloved, the Bible says, and my desire is for you. In our lives, you get to the mature bride, and what she knows is that her life is about him desiring her. It's turned around. We desire him, yes, but when you walk in a place of maturity, it's he desires me. You know I'm not talking about dancing. I'm talking about intimacy, and I'm not talking about your body. I'm talking about your heart. Keep your heart here with mine. If we live by the Spirit, let us also keep in step with the Spirit. Years ago, the Lord said to me, I lead you like a great dancer leads. 5, 6, 7, 8, and. He being the great dancer. In other words, he's going to just give me a cue like a dancer gives. There's no, let's step left, go over here. It's kind of like the horse whisperer saying, you're not going to need me anymore. It doesn't mean you don't have the Holy Spirit. It means that the Holy Spirit's not going to tell you everything to do now, because he's now trusting you with what he's been training you and has raised you up to do, and he's trusting you, and you're doing it with him. You're co-leading and running with him. And it's the same with the dance. It's just when you're dancing, there's just a cue that they give. It might just be the tiniest little touch on the back. If the hand goes up, that means you're going to go underneath. If it goes down, you're going to go this way. It's just a cue. There's no words. It's just that it's something that you feel, you perceive. You're so connected at the heart level that you can just feel his heart when he moves you in a direction. And when you dance, you have to keep all your own tone. If you just like lay your arms on your dance teacher, he's going to go, hold your own arms up. They're your arms. So you hold your own arms up. You have tone all the way through, and you power yourself across the floor. What if you just stood there and he had to sort of drag you this way and then drag you backwards? Okay, it doesn't work. He's entrusted to you with power, and you power yourself across the floor. I've taught you how to dance. Now move with me, and I will give you a cue. And there's so much dignity in walking with the Lord like that. There's so much more fun, and he will take you wonder by wonder. When we get out from underneath, tell me what to do, and I'll do it. He says, I will meet you on the dance floor, but be prepared to be swept off your feet. Several years back, I had a ball. It was just an idea that I had for a long time, because you never get to go to any, some people do, I guess, but we never got to go to anything like that. And so we were sitting around, and somebody was asking, what kind of dress do you want to wear at the ball? And so people were saying different things, and they said, well, Lee, what kind of dress do you want to wear? And I said, I want to wear a dress that would make a grown man cry. Anybody else want to do that? It's true. If Jesus came right here and he said, Lee, what do you want? I'd say, I want to look like Jennifer Lopez and have a heart like Mother Teresa. And oh, dear God, don't switch them. When I thought about the next day what I said about the dress, and I was in the Word, I realized the dress I want to wear is in Revelation 19, and the man that I want to bring to tears with beauty is Jesus. Let us rejoice and be glad and give him glory, for the wedding of the Lamb has come, and his bride has made herself ready. Fine linen, bright and clean, was given her to wear. See, there is a dress. There is a celebration, a wedding, and Prince Charming. And oh, there will be dancing. I have one final moment, and then we'll just, you're released to go to dinner. This is a scroll. The Lord gave me this idea back a ways. And so just enjoy it.